What is up, ladies and gentlemen? Welcome back to another episode of the FanCast Movies Podcast. We are live here. My name is Eric Davis. I'm joined, of course, by my co-host, Sean O'Connell. Sean, say hello so we know you're alive.
Hello, everyone. How are we doing today?
We are doing okay. We are the FanCast Movies Podcast. This is episode – I don't know what – at some point I got to count how many episodes we've done because there's been like a lot. We're probably approaching some kind of anniversary where I should send you a gift basket or something.
Well, we started this as like a thing, you know, like let's just get on and talk about movies kind of thing. But then it's developed into a weekly sort of session that I look forward to, actually.
I look forward to it too. You know, we've bonded. We've shared our life experiences, and it's therapeutic in a way, I think.
I hope it is for the listeners also.
This is our therapy session weekly. We talk it out. But you, speaking of the podcast, you can find it on Fandango.com. We are also on Movies.com. Sean and I are on Twitter. Our Twitter handles are in the post that you've come to find us in. And today we've got a lot to talk about, Sean. We're going to start off 50 Shades of Grey.
Yes.
Big news this week. This is a big film, obviously, based on the book, the sexy book. Mm-hmm. And Charlie Hunnam, who was supposed to play Christian Grey, has unexpectedly dropped out. The official reason is that his Sons of Anarchy schedule is a little bit too crazy, and he can't really fit the movie in. There are probably some other things that are come along with that, but those aren't being mentioned. There are a bunch of people that are speculating that maybe he wasn't crazy about the script. Maybe he wasn't getting along with the filmmakers or the producers, but that's all speculation. That's all baggage. We don't want to focus on the baggage. We want to focus on what's going to happen because that's what fans want to know. Sean, let's start out by saying, how close are we to getting a new Christian Grey, and who are the dudes that are coming along?
Well, the dudes is an easier question to answer because before Charlie Hunnam got the role, there was a short list, you know, that feverish fans were throwing around the internet in chat rooms where they, you know, were launching online petitions on places like change.org to get white collar star Matt Bomer cast or Ian Somerhalder, who some people know from Lost, but most people probably know from The Vampire Diaries, hired. And I think that those campaigns are going to heat up, you know, or they're going to start from right where they left off because there was so much disappointment from certain groups when Charlie Hunnam got cast in the role that those people are going to step right back up and think, this great, this is our chance. And I guess what it means is it helps producers that if they were ever close to going with one of those people, and maybe it came down to like a flip a coin type decision where they ended up going with Charlie Hunnam over maybe Matt Bomer or Ian Somerhalder or someone else, that now they can go to those people and say, hey, you know, this choice role, this plum role, which I do think is kind of a star-making role. It has the potential to launch a franchise around somebody who can now be famous for this. Now, Charlie Hunnam tried this past summer with Pacific Rim, but, you know, and that movie did okay, did better overseas than it did domestically. But I don't think anybody left that one thinking like, oh, Charlie Hunnam is a star in the making and we got to get him in four other films. So I kind of thought he should have stayed with this and at least just wrote it out to see where it took him. But now I think that they're going to have to plug someone else in and keep going because they still have this August 1st, 2014 release date, and they wanted to start production on the film in November. So hopefully having that short list of people means that they don't have to completely start from square A, and they'll still be able to stay on schedule as much as possible. But if we don't hear anything by early next week, then we might start to suspect that there's a little bit of trouble going on with this production.
I think we're going to hear something soon. They have a short list. Dakota Johnson is playing Anastasia Steele. I love the names in this movie, in this book. But she's playing Anastasia Steele. She's locked. She's loaded. She's ready to go. I think it'll come down to the chemistry. I know that's a big deal. This is a big deal for this franchise, is the chemistry between these two characters, because it has to be electric. That's what's going to sell audiences. When all the fans of this book go to the movie, they want to see these two and they want to feel that electricity that they feel when they're reading the book, when they're watching it on screen. So whatever dude they get, they're going to have to test the chemistry with Dakota Johnson. They're probably going to be stripping them down. They're probably going to take some of the stuff that maybe didn't go so well with Hunnam and incorporate it into however they audition this man. Some of them they probably already auditioned. A couple of names I'll tell you the guy I like that I've heard of. You know, some of these guys, they're all from TV. Charlie Hunnam, Sons of Anarchy. They're all from TV. Hunnam was the only guy that's kind of done – he did a big blockbuster this summer. I think they went with him because of that, because he was the most well-known of these guys.
Okay.
So if they're going to do that the next – you know, if they're going to do that again, I would say – and this guy's name has been popping up a lot – is Alexander Skarsgård.
Okay.
Been on True Blood. Guy's got a crazy female fan base. Skarsgård. I've been near and in the vicinity of Skarsgård Ania. That's a big world.
Skarsgårdnado.
I've been in the Skarsgårdnado, which is a sci-fi movie that'll come out as a companion piece to 50 Shades Grey if he's cast. I've been in the Skarsgårdnado, and I can tell you, dude has a lot of female fans. He's okay with nudity. If you've seen The East, I think he bears a little behind.
Yeah, I think he does.
In The East. And you know what? He just kind of, when you look at him, he's got this really sort of freaky kind of domineering, presence.
He seems older, though, isn't he? That's the one thing that's holding me up about him.
Yeah, I think you have to go with someone who's a little bit older just to sort of get that balance between the two.
Okay.
I think. I'm not a huge guy with the book, so I don't know. I don't know off the top of my head how far apart they are in age, characters. But I don't know. I like Skarsgård. I really like him. I know a couple other – Matt Bomer.
Yes. He's getting a lot of run.
The White Collar?
Yes. Well, and like that was the guy who they launched an actual petition, you know, with people signing an online petition to make sure that he got it. They wanted him and Alexis Bledel. Well, they didn't get Alexis Bledel, but now I think they probably feel like they can still rally and get the guy who they initially wanted. And I guess it's just because the way that the character is described in the book fits a certain mold. Mm-hmm. But you know that whoever is announced, it's going to create havoc. You know, there's going to be one side that thinks that he's right. There's going to be an even louder voice that thinks that whoever they choose is wrong. But you and I probably have to agree on this. This sort of controversy, this mini controversy, is only going to help draw more interest to the film. Don't you think it's even hotter now than it was prior to all of this? Because I think there's going to be a curiosity factor, a must-see. You know, is it because the script is bad? Why did he drop out? Is it really the schedule? I don't think anybody really believes the scheduling excuse.
I don't think anybody really cares either. I think the built-in fan base for this is built in.
Yeah.
And when you mention a built-in fan base, that means that they're in it for the long haul. And you're gonna get all those fans to go no matter what, you know, no matter how many people drop out of this freaking movie, they're gonna go to see it, and it does make it that much more interesting now, and you just kind of got to get it into production at this point, get her into production, and then we can kind of start playing around, then we can start looking at some pictures and stuff like that, but I mean. I don't know if the fans are. I don't know if the fans are looking at these guys and are saying he looks the most like what I imagine Christian Grey to look like. I think at the end of the day, you need an actor behind these looks. I'm a fan of Skarsgård. I think he's freaky. He's a good looking dude. Can get naked. He's got a ton. He's got a huge female fan base. Don't know these other guys as well. Don't watch White Collar. Ian Somerhalder is another dude from The Vampire Diaries. Don't really watch that.
No, I knew him from Lost, basically.
Joshua Bowman is a guy that's on Revenge.
Listen, they had me at Dakota Johnson. I'm in. So, and successfully, producers of 50 Shades of Grey, you've made Eric and I do two podcasts on it. So you're winning this race.
We have. But we expect a decision to come, I think, within the next few days. I can't imagine we wouldn't see, you know, the decision be made. I think right now they're probably feverishly bringing in guys. I know the author is in L.A. They're probably bringing in these guys to do whatever kind of chemistry audition they feel like they need to with Miss Johnson. And they'll find their man, and maybe Monday we will have our 50 Shades of Grey cast.
Smart. All of these auditions will be saved for a DVD release of 50 Shades of Grey because fans would snatch that up.
once they start making this movie, then we could talk about what they really need to do. And they need to just shoot the hell out of this thing. And then, I mean, I think their best possible scenario is to wind up with two cuts,
right.
the X-rated cut and the R-rated cut. And now you can play around with those as much as you want. You can save the unrated for the DVD. You could re-release it into theaters 2 months after the first one hits. I mean, you could just really play around.
I want you to put a camera, a webcam on the set, too, and charge people to watch the filming of this on a webcam. I think the interest is that high.
God. Can you imagine the money that they would make on a webcam in the corner of – I mean, because you could literally be that fly on the wall.
Yes. And this watching is one of those productions where you kind of want to be like that, don't you?
You do. You do. You sort of want to invade that privacy. But then again, you know, I imagine the sex scenes in this film are going to be difficult for these actors to take on. They're going to have to bring themselves to certain places.
Right.
And when those scenes are shot, you really kind of want a skeleton crew. You really want to be able – I always remember when Aronofsky shot those crazy scenes with Kunis and Portman for Black Swan.
Right.
And I remember him talking about just having this really bare-bones skeleton crew, you know, maybe three or four people in the room. So this way these actors can kind of – physically transport themselves into another person, because these scenes that you really have to give a lot of yourself for those kinds of scenes, and we'll talk about that, Sean. I know you're getting excited right now as we talk.
I'm
about
getting them. The vapors.
You are getting the vapors, but we have to move on because we have actual other movies that are hitting theaters this weekend.
Yes, with casts, real casts that are in place and not dropping out, and they're ready to scream.
Real films that are done and in the can. We're going to start with Carrie. Which is a horror remake, and as we talk about Carrie, we're going to talk about Sean and I picked our favorite horror remake. So if you go to see Carrie this weekend and you're like, you know what, I'm jonesing for more horror remakes, Sean and I will each give you a choice to go watch after you watch Carrie, to kind of make it like a horror remake marathon for yourself.
I feel it's important that we emphasize too, because I've heard from far too many people who don't realize that not only was Carrie a film beforehand, you know, that this is a remake. Some people think this is an original story.
No.
It was a remake of a movie, and it's an adaptation of a very famous Stephen King book. So, you know, if you go see Carrie this weekend and you really like it, you might want to go out of your way to sort of seek out the original, see how it compares to the Brian De Palma version, which with Sissy Spacek playing the role that Chloe Moretz plays now, and find the Stephen King book. It was his first published book. It's a great story. It's the one that kind of defined him as an author who's become a cultural icon now at this point. But I think it's also one of these stories that has been around long enough and deserves to be updated. And I don't always feel that way about horror films, and especially looking over the list of horror remakes. You called it a mixed bag. I think it's more of like a real missed opportunity for a lot of these films that think that they're trying to update a horror film, but then they end up not being as interesting as the original films.
Yeah, I agree. I like Carrie, though, for a remake, because I think we do need more female-driven genre movies where female isn't naked, having sex, and running away from some kind of predator.
Right.
That's why I love the fact that Carrie's coming out. I also love the fact that Carrie's coming out 2 weeks after Gravity came out and is making bonkers money off of a female-led, female-driven performance from Sandra Bullock. And I hope that these kinds of films coming out at October will sort that spin around the scary movie philosophy that has the girl in danger, that, you know, I like it. I like kind of girls taking charge, and I think that we need to see more of that.
There's also just certain iconic roles in horror films that, you know, you want to see different people translate, and Carrie's mother is definitely one of them. And the fact that they got Julianne Moore to play this domineering woman, this abusive woman who doesn't want to give her daughter any sort of freedom. It's this sort of push and pull between a parent as the daughter is aging, except when this daughter is coming into the puberty age, she's also telekinetic. And so it creates a lot of problems for everybody at home and eventually everybody at school at the prom. But it looks like Julianne Moore. Now, neither of us have seen the film. But it looks like from all the clips that Julianne Moore has really figured out how to get underneath the skin of this character and just make her hateful. You know, you're supposed to hate Carrie's mother want bad things to happen to her. And it seems to be coming across. That vibe is coming across in the trailers.
Yeah, Julianne Moore is incredible. If you put a gun to my head and said, you know, give me your favorite actress or your top three favorite actresses, Julianne Moore would be in there for me. She's someone when, you know, you'll get every once in a while, you get a couple of movies where she's just kind of phoning it in as like, you know, the wife or somebody like this, but then she gets these films where she just completely loses herself in them, and in a role, you know, Boogie Nights, Carrie is one of them, and I say give it a shot. Advanced Buzz, Sean and I haven't seen it. They're not really screening it for the press until right, you know, if they do, it's right before the movie comes out. Mm-hmm. There's no reviews on Rotten Tomatoes to go by, so we can't really steer you in a specific direction. A little bit of buzz behind the scenes that we're hearing is that it is good and that Julianne Moore just kills it. Mm-hmm. So I would recommend going to see it. We only have a few minutes to discuss this, so Sean, let's spit out our favorite horror remake. You go first.
I picked The Fog, which I thought was just a great adaptation of, you know, a classic horror film. And one of these ones that just, it's one of those horror films where nobody knows what the threat is. And I love situations like that, where not where it's like a deranged killer who's going after the stock characters, but these, you know, innocent people in a small town that all of a sudden just have to band together and face a threat that they don't really fully understand. And even when the movie ends, the audience doesn't fully understand it. And I thought The Fog, the original Fog, was a really good movie. But then when they redid it recently in 2005, I thought they used technology, updates in technology, to really make it just a terrifying experience, because this threat was all around you. And then if you get the DVD of it, there's a black and white version that you can watch, which even gives you that sort of throwback feel to the early 50s and 60s when people were really experimenting with horror, almost like a Vincent Price type vibe to it, that I thought that even made the 2005 version, which I liked, a little bit better. So I'm going with The Fog.
You mentioned The Fog, and all I want to talk about is The Mist and how insane that ending is in that film.
That is great.
You know, it's hard picking favorite horror remakes. You know, you mentioned like The Ring. Is a good one to mention. Let Me In, which is probably one of the better recent remakes,
right?
Of a film called Let the Right One In. Although it's hard for me to say watch Let Me In over Let the Right One In, because Let the Right One In is just amazing.
Mm-hmm.
So I would actually say, you know, the original. For me, Dawn of the Dead, Zack Snyder.
Yeah, that was a great one.
Welcome to Hollywood, Zack Snyder. Make an awesome horror movie and then don't make another horror movie again, which kind of upset me, because Dawn of the Dead, the opening sequence in Dawn of the Dead is one of my favorite in Zack Snyder's remake, is one of my favorite opening sequences that I've seen in a horror movie.
Dude, the first 10 to 15 minutes of it are fantastic.
Yeah. That opening is just incredible.
Yeah.
And it's just a really great, solid remake that sort of kind of jolts you back into the zombie. I feel like Dawn of the Dead, I don't want to say it single-handedly, but it really did help this whole zombie resurgence that kind of came back from that, that was born from that remake.
Dude, I'm playing The Last of Us, the PlayStation 3 game, which is a zombie walk through a zombie apocalypse type story. It's phenomenal. I think it owes a lot to that Dawn of the Dead remake too.
Yeah, and I thought Snyder's direction was just slick and stylish, and it was full of surprises. And it was like you sort of saw this filmmaker saying, "Hey, look, listen to me, watch me. I'm going to be a big name." And he is a big name. He's in the DC universe, and he's doing the Superman. He's doing the Superman versus Batman. He did 300.
You said something really funny though. Like, you would have been content if he just kept making horror films.
I would have. You know, I feel like these days you're getting these guys that are making these really soulful, passionate debuts, and then saying, okay, I'm going to go now parlay this into doing some giant blockbuster. Another guy is Duncan Jones. He made Moon, or Neil Blomkamp, District 9. And you see these films come out, and you're like, oh, these just awe-inspiring debuts. Mm-hmm. And all you want them to do is make another movie like that with as much passion and creativity. But, you know, it's hard. You're not in their position, because they make these films, they're calling cards. And then all of a sudden the big studios are saying, oh, come do this giant blockbuster. blockbuster that we have. Come do this giant blockbuster that you have. And now, you know, Duncan Jones is doing a World of Warcraft movie, and right. Blomkamp did Elysium. And, you know, eventually you hope that they return to sort of those roots. But, yeah, Zack Snyder's another one. You know, he did Dawn of the Dead, and I was like, I would have loved to see another freaking horror movie from this guy.
I'm going to give a shout-out to the 2005 Amityville Horror remake that Ryan Reynolds did, too, which I thought was a pretty underrated horror film, but yeah, as remakes go. So I want to toss that one out there.
Toss that one out. As someone who lives 5 minutes from the actual Amityville Horror house, I don't like talking about the Amityville because you grew up there too. Around these parts, people really kind of get pissed off when you mention Amityville.
I know. We used to drive past the old house all the time. It's not even standing anymore though, is it?
No, the house is still there. I think it's changed in terms of they've done things to it.
Okay.
And then the bar that the guy went to after he killed his parents is now a seafood restaurant that I've eaten at, and it's a pretty good seafood restaurant. I would recommend it.
Strong tips on this podcast too.
Yeah, but people around here, you know, kind of really feel like the family made the story up, and really kind of are pissed off that this sort of made up story to kind of help them get out of debt has turned into this, you know.
Well.
Has turned into what it is now.
It might become the sequel to The Conjuring, too, since that was the Warrens, Ed and Lorraine Warren, who did that. But we're way off track now.
Yeah, we are way off track. But if you are interested in Amityville, there is an interesting documentary called My Amityville Horror, which talks about is all about one of the sons, the Lutz's kid, who mm-hmm. kind of was a kid when all these things supposedly, quote-unquote, happened to them. And they kind of follow him around and talk about his life, and he's a really interesting dude. And I don't know if you're going to get all the answers that you want, but you get to watch a weird dude for an hour and a half. Sean, let's move on to my Q&A. Yes. Q&A portion. As we wrap up this week's podcast, I want to ask you, help people go to the movies this weekend. Okay. Escape Plan is another movie that's coming out. Arnold Schwarzenegger, Sylvester Stallone, my Q&A with you. Mr. Sean, you've seen it.
I have.
If I am a fan of Sylvester Stallone and Arnold Schwarzenegger and or, I will say, will I love this movie?
You will. I'll stop short of saying love, but you're going to like it a lot. You're going to like it more than you probably liked The Last Stand or Bullet to the Head, which were Stallone and Schwarzenegger's last two efforts to recapture their glory days. This one feels like it really could have been released in 1986 or 87 nice. And been sandwiched right between like Cobra and The Running Man. If you just can overlook the fact that actors are just older and they can't, you know, they can't cheat the fact that they've gotten much older, and there's tread on those tires. But the director, whose name I'm drawing a blank on, he's a Swedish director. He did The Right with Anthony Hopkins, but I wasn't that impressed with that. He kind of just figures out how to make a throwback to the movies that these guys used to do. It has a one concept, but it's a kind of clever concept. Stallone is this professional breaker out of prison guy. And when you need your prison tested, you hire him and you put him behind the bars, and he scouts the guards and he looks for weaknesses in your system, and then he gets himself out and then shows the warden like, hey, this is what you're doing wrong. Well, he gets, you know, put behind the bars of this top secret prison, and of course it's a frame job and he's being set up by somebody, and I won't reveal who it is. The sad part is Schwarzenegger has a great reveal, like in the second act, because he's a convict at the prison already. And if we weren't used to these guys working together in the Expendables movies, it would be such a blown away moment. Like, you'd be like, oh my God, look at the two of them working together, and there's Schwarzenegger, and he gets a great reveal. But we just kind of, we've seen it already. So that the luster of them pairing is gone a little bit. But I still think it was a lot of fun. When everything starts to be explained as to who's framing Stallone, it makes no sense. But none of those movies really made sense back in the day. It's kind of just giddy and violent, and it understands who its audience is. And I think it definitely delivers on what it wanted to do.
Yeah, I think the difference between 1987 and now is that if this came out in 1987, it'd probably make bonkers money.
Oh, yeah. And you know what? This deserves to do pretty well, because I think that the audience, you know, who are our age, you know, mid-30s, late-30s, who grew up on those films, if you go check this out, it's like a little time capsule. You're going to be like, they used to make movies like this, and I dig it, and Stallone and Schwarzenegger still know how to play to that audience really well. They're just older. They just look older, but it's still pretty bone-crunching.
Sean, also out, I think 1700 theaters is The Fifth Estate, You saw it in Toronto. Weren't that crazy about it. I think we've talked about it when we were in Toronto. What do you think about this film? If you are tangentially – I always botch the big words. If you are interested somewhat in the WikiLeaks story.
I don't think you're going to get much out of this film.
You're
still
not going to get much still.
No. And again, here we're going to send you to like a documentary. There's a documentary that exists by Alex Gibney, who's a genius, called We Steal Secrets. And that tells the complete story of WikiLeaks in a way that this film doesn't. It feels like there's too much story to tell, and the Fifth Estate sort of gets lost figuring out what angle to cover it from, but it never really figured out what it wanted to be.
I feel like we don't know this guy enough yet to do this kind of movie.
Maybe. Yeah, that might be it, because it's still a story that's being told, and it's still a life that's being developed. But even at that, you know, the movie should work as a standalone bit. You know, like, we might not know Captain Phillips, but Captain Phillips works because it tells a bit of a story from start to finish. And there are WikiLeaks chunks of story that you could have told and made it really interesting. But this movie tries to tell like four different milestones in the history of this still new website, and it just didn't feel like it had a handle on any of them.
Quickly, two films in limited release are two of the best films of the year. We have All Is Lost and 12 Years a Slave. I think we'll talk about them more as they expand. Want to highlight 12 Years a Slave. We both saw it in Toronto. And it's an incredible movie.
I was able to revisit it last week for a second time. And, dude, my response after seeing it in Toronto was I don't really want to see it again anytime soon. But watching it a second time made me appreciate the craft that goes into this film. It's a brilliant movie. And to the point now, Eric, where I was kind of like, it's a great movie, but I can't really embrace it. Now I can't keep it off my top 10. Like, it's going to have to be on my year-end top 10 list because it's that good. And what Chiwetel Ejiofor does in the lead role is just staggering. He's unbelievable.
Yeah, it is. And if you're looking for the scariest movie to see this October, it's 12 Years a Slave. That movie freaks me out. I got to run an interview with the lead, one of the actresses in it, the debut actress.
Lupita.
Really incredible, incredible actress. The most striking debut performance of the year, I feel. I want to blow her up a little bit and blow up her spot and really draw her attention because she is incredible.
But Redford's movie is great too. If All Is Lost is playing near you, I think you should definitely go out of your way to find it. It's a tremendous performance by Robert Redford, who plays a man who's just it's such a simple concept. He's on a boat sailing out to sea, and his boat gets damaged. And it's kind of like, what does he do at that point? Does he go back to the land, or does he keep sailing straight forward into a storm? And it's that simple of a movie, but it's fascinating. I loved it.
Yeah, and it's nice to see a guy like Robert Redford, who's kind of in the twilight of his career, taking on a role that's that demanding of him. Mm-hmm. Because you don't see that a lot. You see a lot of these guys kind of doing the shticky stuff, the easy stuff, the payday stuff. But then, you don't expect a guy like Robert Redford at his age to do this kind of – take on this kind of role. And I think it's worth seeing on that alone.
Well, it's funny because All Is Lost and 12 Years a Slave are realistically terrifying movies. They might not be the type of horror movie that you're looking for at Halloween time, but they are movies that put you in situations that if you were ever in them themselves, you would be the most scared you've ever been in your entire life. So for psychological chills, go see either of those films.
I completely agree. Sean O'Connell, thank you very much for another wonderful conversation here. As we approach the mid-October range. We'll talk more about Halloween movies later in the month as we approach that holiday. For the rest of you out there, thank you so much for listening to the FanCast Movies Podcast. You can find us on Fandango.com. You can find us on Movie.com. You can find Sean and I on Twitter, being idiots every single day. Sean, thanks a lot.
Always a pleasure, Eric.
And for all of you out there, enjoy your week at the movies.